I am like the roaring lion in the dream. My roaring will wake you up from this dream unto reality.
This is The Lion's Roar, the Dear Sai podcast all about understanding the teachings of Satya Sai Baba in their truest form.
Saira, I'm Dakshina, and today we're going to talk about, you guessed it, the body. Building on what we've already learnt in Discourse 2, Swami helps us understand what the role of the body is further in Discourse 3. Let's flip over the page and see what he has to say.
Episode 7, A Safe, A Fast, and the Middle Path.
It's early morning in Prashanti. We can hear the distant sound of bells and birds as we walk into Sai Kulbenthal. The chandeliers are brightly lit. The mandir is so beautifully decorated with the most captivating floral arrangements. We place our cushions where we're directed to sit down and we make ourselves comfortable. There are thousands of devotees around us, smiling and eagerly awaiting the morning to start. Everyone is dressed in vibrant colours, looking only their best for Swami. It's funny, isn't it? Swami says God alone exists. God alone exists. God alone exists. But then, there's an awful lot of people around, isn't there? Every face has its own individual features. Each person their own genetic makeup. We appear to be so different from the person next to us. Who are all these individuals? If I am not this body, then are these people also not the body? What is this body?
This body is a valueless iron safe. Like the precious jewels kept in an iron safe, there is the divine inside the body. This Sai's word is the path of truth.
The poem that Swami starts with sets the tone for what is to come. We've already seen that the body is inert, transient, always changing, constantly deteriorating, and eventually, one day it'll stop working. As Swami puts it in the poem, it is valueless. This doesn't mean, however, that it is not important. Swami opens the discourse saying, although the human body is valueless and impermanent, it has to be carefully looked after because it enshrines the divine Atma. Enshrines the divine Atma. In each and every body, God resides. So it is our duty to take care of the iron safe only because it holds such a pure and precious jewel. Remember Tamagotchis? How we would bring them with us everywhere in our pockets and make sure that they were taken care of? We'd even take them to school and check on them during recess and lunch. Each device had three buttons that allowed us to feed, clean, and play with the cute little virtual pet. Just like we looked after the device because of the pet inside it, we need to take care of the body because of the divine residing in it. I mean, what is the point of adding fancy diamantes and keychains to the Tamagotchi if the screen is broken and we can't see the pet inside, right? We have to take care of the body, yes. But we do this keeping in mind that the only reason why we are taking care of it is because it is a temple that houses the divine. Without this perspective, we can get so wrapped up in maintaining the body, forgetting the reason why we are doing it in the first place. Swami connects the dots so clearly.
అనారోగ్యమునకు గురియైనటువంటి దేహము, బలహీనతకు గురియైనటువంటి దేహము ఒక దృఢమైనటువంటి సంకల్పాన్ని చేయలేదు.
A weak and unhealthy body is incapable of any resolute action.
పవిత్రమైన, దివ్యమైన, భవ్యమైన భావములు మానవుని నుండి ఆవిర్భవించవలనన్న శరీరం దృఢమైనటువంటి గను ఆరోగ్యమైనటువంటిది గను ఉండాలి.
Pure, noble, and sublime ideas can emanate only from a strong and healthy body.
అన్ని మతముల వారు కూడాను దేహం యొక్క పోషణను అంగీకరించినటువంటి వారే.
All religions are agreed on this point.
అనిత్యము అశాశ్వతము అయినప్పటికీ సత్య నిత్యమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వము ఇందుకు నివాసంగా ఉండటం చేత ఈ యొక్క దేహమును మనము ప్రత్యేకమైనటువంటి శ్రద్ధను చూపవలసినటువంటిది.
Although the body is impermanent, special care should be taken to maintain it properly because it provides residence for the eternal Atma. Since pure and noble thoughts can only arise from a strong and healthy body, it is our duty not to neglect this body. Swami points out that those who don't understand this truth subject the body to various ordeals in the name of religious vows, fasting, and penance. There is a common belief that suffering and torturing the body will help us progress spiritually, that it will get us closer to God. Swami pulls this idea apart. Before we bust that myth, let's first take a step back and look at why we fast. When referring to fasting in Sanskrit, the term upavasa is used. Interestingly, the word upavasa doesn't have any reference to food. The real meaning of this word gives us a clue as to what the intention of the practice of fasting really is. During a Shivaratri discourse in Prashanthi Nilayam in 1966, Swami defined upavasa. Upavasa means that all your thoughts, deeds, and words on those holy days must be about God. That you should spend the day near Him, in Him, and for Him. It means that eating, sleeping, and other bodily avocations have to take a secondary role, and meditation and repetition of God's name have to take the main role. With this definition, Swami is bringing our attention to the fact that simply not eating doesn't actually bring us closer to God. What is supposed to happen is that all the time we normally spend thinking about what ingredients to buy, what to cook, what to eat, all that takes a back seat when we fast. We are left with the mental space and the time to solely think about God. So, fasting and other forms of spiritual disciplines hold their own value. Swami is not saying not to fast. He is telling us to understand that these disciplines in themselves are not going to liberate us. They merely cleanse our inner space. They prepare us. By hitting the anthill, can you kill the snake inside it? By subjecting the body to torture, can you realize the Atma?
ఆకలి దప్పులు మానినంత ఆత్మజ్ఞాని తానవునా?
By giving up good food and water, can you attain liberation?
తానెవరో తెలియకున్న తత్వజ్ఞానం ఎతుకులను తత్వజ్ఞానమును కుదరవలనన్న తానెవరో గుర్తించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాలి.
Self-realization is possible only through knowing your own real nature. Okay, so bear with me here. Have you played Flappy Bird? Basically, it's a game where you have to make sure that the bird flies in between the two green pipes, providing the bird with just the right amount of flaps to get through the course. If you haven't played it yet, don't play it. And if you do play it, don't play it. It's such an addictive game and I've had to delete it off my phone. But just like the bird, we need to understand the nature of the body, provide the attention and care it needs to maintain that middle ground. Too much or too little attention can lead to not fulfilling one's duty in life and will result in not attaining self-realization. Prince Siddhartha, who later became the Buddha, came to this understanding through his own life experience. Let's travel to a time where a young Prince Siddhartha was playing in the palace, oblivious to the reality of the world outside it. You probably know the story. It was prophesied that the young prince might become a great king or a great teacher. Of course, fate led Siddhartha out of the palace where he saw a crippled old man, a sick man, a dead body, and a wandering holy man, prompting a deep inquiry into life and suffering. Leaving behind his wife and child, Siddhartha turned a renunciant. In his quest to escape the cycle of birth and death, Siddhartha followed a renunciate's path and went into the forest. He met a group of travelling ascetics whose method of spiritual practice was to lead a life of deprivation and self-denial and attain God through extreme means. Siddhartha thought to himself, "For so many years I've lived in luxurious pleasure palaces. I was treated very gently, yet still my mind did not find peace. Perhaps the methods of these men are right. I shall join them in their practices and see if this leads to an end of suffering." And so he began these difficult and painful practices. He sat for hours and hours in the same spot. Even though his legs and back hurt very much, he would not move a muscle. He let himself be burned by the blazing summer sun and chilled by the winter winds. He ate barely enough food to remain alive. But no matter how difficult it was, he was determined to continue. Siddhartha treated his body more and more harshly. Initially, he slept only a few hours each night, but eventually, he stopped going to sleep altogether. He also stopped taking the one poor meal a day that he used to eat. He instead ate the few seeds and berries that the wind blew into his lap. He grew thinner and thinner, and he looked little more than a living skeleton. 6 long years passed. One day he thought to himself, "Am I any closer to my goal than I was 6 years ago? Or am I still as ignorant as before? When I was a prince living in luxury, I wasted my time in pleasure. And now I am a renunciant living in caves, enduring pain. But I have still not attained my goal. I am so thin that I can see my bones through my skin. How can I meditate when I am too hungry even to think clearly? I can see how it is a mistake to punish my body like this, just as it was a mistake to have wasted so much time in those palaces. To find the truth, I must follow a middle path between too much pleasure and too much pain." Siddhartha practiced such extreme disciplines, almost starving himself to death. But even that didn't lead him to enlightenment. Imagine that. As Swami says in the discourse, a weak and unhealthy body is incapable of any resolute action. Swami brings our attention to the fact that people of all faiths agree that the body needs to be nourished because it is regarded as the temple of the divine within. It is, therefore, our duty not to neglect this holy temple called the body, but to take utmost care, maintaining it so that we can discharge our duties and attain the purpose for why it has been gifted to us. We need to work towards this purpose, starting now. Imagine being a contestant on a big CrossFit competition. It would take many years of training and exercise to build up the physical strength and flexibility, as well as the mental stamina to even be a participant. And like we talked about in the last episode, it also takes a lot of faith in the coach and his method, doesn't it? No one can just wake up the day of the competition and complete the entire course in winning time. It requires a good understanding of the way your body works and lots of time and practice to get there. This is why we need to practice these teachings now. It is only while our body is strong and healthy that we are capable of resolute action. If not, like Siddhartha in his initial phase of inquiry, we won't be able to focus on our goal. So we now understand that we need to take care of the body and that we can't neglect the body, but Swami has also clearly delineated that neither indulgence, neglect, nor any in between will give us liberation. So what is going to get us to our goal then? Earlier, we talked about how Swami says, self-realization is possible only through knowing your own real nature. So the understanding alone is going to get us there. Coming back to Saikul Venthor and to my initial question, by understanding my own nature, will I understand everyone else's as well? If God alone exists and God is essentially my true nature or true self, then there are no others, are there? There are no others sitting around me because God alone exists. My focus has been on the thousands of bodies on the valueless iron safe, when I should have just opened it and looked at the jewel within. Oh, the Vedas are about to start. I better go. We'll continue this line of thinking over the next few episodes. Until then, stay awesome.